Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I am Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, what do you make of Kristi Noem being appointed probable Homeland Security Secretary by incoming President Trump?
Bad for America, bad for dogs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, America, a country that notoriously dislikes dogs. I think it's going to go great. Okay, let's get to the show. Welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for bitches who are ready to stop being polite and start getting hostile. Alyssa, you and I have discussed this. This is going to be a hostility forward 4 years, I believe.
Ready for it.
Last week, I feel like between Tuesday and Wednesday, I had all these imaginary conversations with myself, like pep talks with myself. Then I was like, I don't want a pep talk. Alyssa and I talked, and I felt like I spent so much time working through what I was thinking and how I was feeling. And since then, I feel like I've just been straight up dissociating. So
yeah, I
really would like to kind of stay in this space of dealing with the shock of this election, dealing with how we move forward and dealing with, you know, just how are we going to just carry on in our lives. And because I am out of words, I've said all of them, we have assembled a Hysteria super team this week to join us to make sense of what the hell just happened and how we can move forward. So let me introduce the panel without further ado. Our first panelist is a political commentator and editor at large at the 19th, Erin Haynes. Hi, Erin.
Good to be with you.
How are you? I feel like I'm going to ask every panelist, how are you?
I mean, how is anyone? You know, I'm here. I'm here. We're here. We're doing it. We're here. We're getting ready for the holidays. We're finally on the other side of this election, and what an election it was.
Mm-hmm. To say the least. Our next panelist is a comedian and the host of the podcast Sports Bitches. You can see her live and in the flesh at the DC Improv on December 12th through the 14th. Megan Gailey, welcome back.
Thank you.
How are you?
You know, last Tuesday I said I'm never doing stand-up comedy ever again. And then my husband was like, don't you have to go on the road this weekend? And I was like, yes, I do. And so I flew. I did shows in Brooklyn, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia. And it was good.
Yeah.
I was happy to get to be mean. I lost my voice, literally and figuratively. And people gave me grace with it. And I said I was not going to cancel these shows and miss the opportunity to yell at strangers' husbands. And it was healing. Mm-hmm. And I have to keep doing stand-up because I have bills to pay.
Fair enough. And our final panelist, not in any order in any way, but our final panelist is a writer and activist, Julissa Arce. Her book, You Sound Like a White Girl, The Case for Rejecting Assimilation, is available now. Julissa, welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me. I thought you were going to say we saved the best for last. And I was like, yes, absolutely.
This is an egalitarian space. But yes, you are the best. Julissa, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I think I was really happy that y'all reached out for me to be here today because I felt like I really was in need of a space like this to kind of process my feelings and my thoughts. So I have had something to look forward to since I got Caroline's text message. I was like, yes, I will be there. And I think I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I think I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. I feel like finding things to look forward to, just even little things, even if you're like, ooh, I just get to buy a new shampoo today because I used all of it. It's like, that's like, honestly, like the sort of thing I'm clinging to. Like, ooh, I used up this salad dressing. Time to make a grocery list. I don't know. Finding things to look forward to is like going to be probably like a lifeline for me these next 4 years. Let's start out with a piece that Erin wrote. Alyssa, do you want to take it away, introducing one of Erin's pieces?
Erin, for the first, all my errands, so many errands today.
So many
for the
errands.
Second time in 8 years, Donald Trump has dashed away the hope that we had to see our first female president take office. Haynes, last week you wrote an article for the 19th titled, What Will It Take for a Woman to Be President? You said what we were all thinking. You and I were talking a lot while you were writing this. And it couldn't have been easy. I know it wasn't easy for you to write the article in that moment. How were you able to find the clarity for such cogent thought?
Well, I mean, yes, as you know, I had to dig deep because, you know, I didn't know what to say. And I felt like, you know, there really was, I certainly when we started the 19th 4 years ago, the idea that a woman would again be at the top of the ticket was not on our bingo card, mm-hmm. right? Like, we were all very surprised by the circumstances under which this came together. But, you know, the moment was here. It seemed like so many people were excited about that, ready to make it finally happen, right? People were finally maybe going to get this thing across the finish line. And yet, once again, Donald Trump defeats the woman that he's running against. And it's just like, you know, I'm thinking about my mom, who is, you know, a seasoned citizen. Is she going to see a woman president mm-hmm. in her lifetime? And I have to say, after 2016, I felt like, well, is it going to happen in my lifetime? I don't know. You know, 2020, you had six women running for president, and they were like, well, none of those women either. And now we get to 2024, and it's like, also not that woman. So it's just like, what does the package need to look like, right? Like, mm-hmm. like who does it need to be? And I've always said, you know, this election was going to be about who we were as Americans and as voters, as much as it was about either of the people that were running for president, right? So, like, what did we find out? That America is just still not ready for this. And I feel like, you know, the unfinished business of the 19th Amendment, for which our newsroom is named, is for us to continue to ask that question. What will it take? Who does it need to be? And by the way, Republicans also did not want Nikki Haley
mm-hmm.
as their candidate. So neither party was ready to elevate the woman to the top job in this country. And I think that that is something that continues to be worth exploring and unpacking.
Mm-hmm.
Erin, are you worried that because
yes.
Are you worried for this specific reason? Are you worried that because American voters, and again, like, you know, we don't need to get into the nuts and bolts of like campaigns or whose fault is it or whatever. I'm blaming the voters because they're the ones who voted. Do you think that the fact that two women have now been defeated at, you know, in an election, a very high stakes election, that there are going to be people who want to use that as pretext for not running women anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a concern. I think it's a concern that women candidates have when they run, especially when they're trying to be trailblazers, when they're trying to be pioneers, right? Like, it's not just about that one election. It is not just about their one candidacy. They understand that them not succeeding might mean that the door is closed indefinitely for the next woman that might try, right? Or they might look at that and say, oh, well, this really seems pretty daunting. If somebody like her, who was so qualified and capable, couldn't get it done, you know, how am I supposed to, you know, blaze this trail? Mm-hmm. And so I do think about that for sure. I mean, certainly I think that we did see, you know, women candidates running for president also inspiring other women to run for mm-hmm. office, even though, you know, they came close but were not able to be successful. So I think that there is some of that too. But until we really start normalizing women's leadership, until our political imagination as a country allows us to see women with the attributes, right, that we assign to somebody who we think about when we think about a president, somebody who's strong, somebody who's powerful, somebody who's commanding, you know, whatever. You know, we're not the electorate is not going to get there, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is, I do think that part of the problem is a lack of political imagination about who gets to lead, like, mm-hmm. and totally lead. I don't mean help, because they're happy with women helping mm-hmm. to lead, but to run the whole thing, we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Could Dolly Parton win?
Absolutely.
Dolly could win.
I just was thinking, I was like, you know, is the only way that we're going to get a woman president having a candidate who just runs wearing a motorcycle helmet the whole time, and then after she wins, she takes it off and she has
like the Masked Singer.
Hair.
The yeah. Masked Candidate.
The Masked Candidate.
We should totally run our elections that way.
100%.
Also, I just want to say right now, can we just throw a PSA right? Don't y'all start calling Michelle Obama. She's not interested.
She'll be so mad.
Told y'all no. Do not start harassing Michelle Obama for 2028. It's not going to happen.
Ever. Yeah. Yeah. Ever. I mean, she's such a good messenger, and she does more than a lot of candidates do, and she doesn't want to run. So, yes, 100%. Don't bug Michelle. Leave her alone. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about who voted for Donald Trump. it's good. We're not going to have like final numbers about how people voted in the election for a while, and exit polling data is notoriously somewhat unreliable, but we do have some clues. We found that Latino men moved toward Trump big time. It was a flip. They flipped from voting for Joe Biden to voting for Donald Trump. Young people, turns out Gen Z sucks. They are further to the right than us, and they are wrong about socks and hair parts. But young people shifted to the right, and that was mostly led by young men. And I got to say, I'm sorry, Alyssa, but Gen X, the biggest Trump voting generation out there, boomers flipped toward Kamala Harris and Democrats. Gen X is no bueno. Lead poisoning, maybe.
It was all the hoses we were drinking from.
It was all the hoses you were drinking from. It was the unleaded gas. I honestly think you guys were more lead poison than any other generation. I think it's that.
We were feral.
Yes, 100% feral. Latchkey kids. Parents had to check on you at 10 p.m. to be like,
that was
oh,
it.
Yeah.
We needed commercials.
my kids are home. Okay, good. Okay, go back to watching Dallas or whatever. Jaleesa, I want to start.
Accurate.
I want to start with you on this. Did Democrats take some demographics for granted?
I think Democrats took all the demographics for granted. I mean, I think if you look at the current exit poll data that we have, it's like pretty much every demographic shifted towards Trump. Mm-hmm. Like every single one of the demographics.
Except boomers,
which is surprising given some of the doors that I knocked on and the reactions that I got from boomers. So yes, like I think that, you know, I think, you know, it's interesting, like you said, like, oh, I blame the voters. Like, yes, you know, it's their fault because they voted for the wrong person. But I also think recently I've been thinking a lot about, well, are we asking the wrong question? Like, I think what is wrong with the party that is not appealing to all these different demographics? You know, when I think about like Latino men, I'm not surprised by it because all the poll data that we had before the election pointed toward Latino men are going to go for Trump. And it is a little bit annoying to hear so much of the rhetoric, like blaming Latino voters for like giving Trump the edge, because Latino voters, you know, in Texas and Florida that went for Trump, it's like, okay, well, those states were not in play anyways, right? So like, yes, but also I was more focused on sort of like, you know, the swing states that everybody else was focused on and like how Latino men were going to vote for, how they were going to vote. I've been reading this book called The Factors, which is about the rise of the Latino far right, which is to me like it's like an oxymoron, like the title of this book, but it's happening. And it just really shows that a lot of Latinos, particularly Latino men, do feel abandoned by the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And we haven't found the right message to say to them, no, we have not forgotten about you. And for that message to continue, not just leading up to an election, but in between elections also. And we have to make, I think, a lot more investment in those communities in the next 4 years. And it has to start like today. Mm-hmm.
What kind of messaging do you think? I mean, if you like, you're hired, you're the chief messaging strategist for the Democratic Party. What is the first step that you take toward repairing the broken bonds between the Democratic Party and Latino men who voted for Republicans?
That's, well, this is why I don't have that job. I'm here to pose the questions.
I heard someone say something that I thought was like so accurate, not of everybody, but in some cases, that Democrats talk to blue-collar workers like we are missionaries, trying to just convert them to our way of life instead of saying, your life is good and what you've chosen is good. We just need to help you thrive. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was such a like excellent way of thinking about it, because not us, of course, because we're perfect. But when you do hear certain candidates talk, it is like, we're going to make your life better so you can be more like this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that has failed. I think that's really a problem.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that, like, you know, speaking about the Latino community, we also have a lot of work to do within our community because there is sort of a disconnect, right, of how Trump's message on immigration, for example. It's like, we're going to deport people, criminals, you know, rapists. And for some reason, and Paula Ramos in her book says this, though the Latinos that are voting for Trump do not see themselves in that them, mm-hmm. right? They don't think that Trump is talking about them, right? They're talking about the other bad Latinos. And so I think we have to do a lot of work in sort of really investing in the messaging in the communities to say, like, he is talking about you too, mm-hmm. right? You might not see yourself in that them, but he does.
You right? know, it reminds me of that story of the, there was a Latino family of conservatives who were like, we hate California. It's way too liberal here. And so they moved to Idaho because they were like, we'll be more accepted. And the racists in Idaho were like, get out of Idaho. And they were like shocked. But I think that that sort of a disconnect is something that we've seen at play in news stories like that as well.
Yeah. And I also think, man, I've been so annoyed with some of the podcasts and like the radio shows I've been listening to in the last few days, in which they keep sort of saying like, oh, you know, Democrats lost because they were more concerned with trans rights than they were about working class voters. And I'm like, first of all, no. And by the way, we can actually do both things. You know, we can mm-hmm. care about the working class and we can be like decent, good human beings that also understand that trans rights are also important, right? And I think the problem is that Republicans have overtaken that message and made trans rights more central to Democrats than it actually is, mm-hmm. you know? And the problem with Democrats, if I say so, is that we're always playing defense. We mm-hmm. let Republicans dictate our messaging, you know, instead of us coming up with our own message and being as bold as we want to be. I feel like we're always afraid to be bold because we're like, oh, we might lose those swing voters. It's like, who, like, speak to your base, you know, energize your base, sing to the choir, get mm-hmm. us excited. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Alyssa, let's talk about white women.
Yeah.
Always me and the white women.
Yeah. How'd we do?
Not great.
Yeah. Can you go into a little bit about why you think white women continue to decide that they are white before they are women?
Well, again, it's like a group of people. We're like, bitches, you're voting against your own self-interest. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? I think that for a lot of weeks, we all had this hope that there was just a bunch of these secret voters, right, that were going to vote their interest. And I think that the one exit poll I saw, which had been on CNN on election night, that made me sick to my stomach immediately, was that like 72% of people who had come out, who had voted, made up their minds before September 1st. And to me, that was catastrophic. That was before Kamala's debate. That was before so much. And, you know, I think that the white women, I feel like the white women, like, they're the ones I'm just the maddest at because they're, look, it's like to Jaleesa's point, you know, the Democratic Party to me should represent, as someone I think who we all love, Ayanna Pressley says, the people closest to pain should be closer to power, right? And that is everybody. That is LGBTQ and trans. That is the working class. Like, that is who we should represent. And the white women, I mean, now to be fair, college graduated white women did tick up for Kamala this time around. But for the most part, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's that white women don't think a woman can be president, which is what it felt like a little bit back in 2016, or if they just voted for fucking tariffs and taxes, which is mostly what it feels like, which is bullshit. Here is the thing. Donald Trump, his absolute gift is grievance politics. Mm-hmm. And when you have people, the not college-educated white women in homes that are struggling, all Donald Trump did was say, you're working as hard as you can, and it's not your fault. And that's all people wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And all other issues be damned. And I also do think that abortion, which we'll talk about later, was a bit, people are trying to say it wasn't as big a factor as it was. I do still think that it really did motivate people to the polls, but in some cases, I think it actually gave them a permission structure to split their vote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that I'm taking away from this is that I think a lot of white women voted conservatively, and I mean that not like party alignment. I think that they believe that their whiteness will protect them if they vote along the lines of a party that like that its entire aim is to mm-hmm. like uphold whiteness. But we know that's not the case. And there are so many examples of women who are immensely privileged who have found themselves like at the crosshairs of these really hurtful and awful policies. Like in Texas, you know, we've seen all in Idaho, we've seen all of these white women who are like, listen, it could happen to you.
White ladies, they hate you too.
Exactly. And I think that white womanhood was used once again as a way to like dredge up fear of the other, fear of immigrants by saying mm-hmm. like the immigrants are coming for the white women. It's just, it's Blazing Saddles. You know what I mean? And I don't want to like minimize it, but I do wish we could build another globe that looks exactly like our globe. You know, like in the final scene of Blazing Saddles, where they build a fake town for the bad guys to attack, so that Trump could like destroy that one and like leave us alone. I want to talk about abortion on the ballot. Abortion rights were a huge issue for the Harris campaign and many Democratic campaigns up and down the ballot. Some political strategists predicted that Kamala would get a boost in states where abortion was on the ballot, but exit polling showed not. Megan, what are your thoughts on the fact that abortion rights still did really well on Election Day this year, but the abortion rights presidential candidate did not?
I mean, it's cognitive dissonance, because if you look at those numbers in Florida, and if you were a teacher— and someone turned in a test that said, I voted for abortion rights and then also voted for Donald Trump, the teacher would say, you need to go back and change one of the answers because those are in opposition of each other. And we, and listen, I know people don't want to be called dumb. I know people don't want to be called uneducated, but they are making decisions that are not based in just basic level thinking, not even critical thinking. And I do think white women feel comfortable saying, I do support abortion, but I would also like my husband to be happy. And they voted in that way. And I was shocked. I do think abortion was successful in some states, but it really is so confusing to me that this man that very obviously was the catalyst to overturn Roe v. Wade, not even because of his own belief system, mm-hmm. but because of the belief system of the party that has elevated him, was really able to pull a fast one on people deciding their own body autonomy. And it really is so baffling because all of us look at it and go, 1 + 1 = 2. And they are saying to us, no, it does not. And I genuinely do not know how you change their mind or if it's even worth it, because they seem too far gone rhetoric that is so untrue mm-hmm. that they may be lost.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron, before we take a quick break, I wanted to ask you, do you think that, like, what do you make of the abortion, pro-abortion vote, anti-Kamala vote, or pro-abortion and pro-Trump vote? Do you think that Trump was able to successfully convince people that Dobbs meant it's back to the states permanently? Like, what do you think happened there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really is fascinating to think about because in the 2 years since Dobbs, we saw abortion being on the ballot and women really using their vote at the ballot box to reject further restrictions on abortion. And yet, you know, we get to 2024 and it's like, okay, I think maybe, and we're still, you know, processing and trying to unpack, you know, what that split ticket vote meant for voters who were able to vote in favor of the abortion initiative, but also voted for Trump. maybe they were convinced that, to your point, Donald Trump has no intention of instituting a federal abortion ban or moving forward with that, right?
So yeah, when has he ever lied? When has he ever said one thing to get what he wants and then changed what he and then did something totally different?
Exactly.
And, he would and never also, lie, Aaron.
But but there were a lot of Republican voters that we heard from going into November who still, despite everything that we have learned and know about him over the better part of a decade, are like, well, he's not really going to do all the things that he says that he is going to do. Mm-hmm. And so that maybe was what explains that vote. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Amendment 4, the right to abortion, outperformed Donald Trump in Florida. Mm-hmm. It got 57%. He got 56%. Kamala got like 42%. But I just, that is fucking wild.
Yeah. Yeah. But that threshold kept it from
it did, but
becoming the law.
Outperformed Donald Trump.
Guys, we need a new Schoolhouse Rock. We need
everyone. You and I have talked about it.
We need totally. We need people to understand the supremacy clause that, like, you can't say, I vote for, it's like saying, I want my house to have electricity in it, but I think that we should have somebody in charge of the power company that can shut electricity off whenever they want. Like, well, you still have a guy that can turn the electricity off, and he lies about turning the electricity. He's going to turn the electricity off. Your house is not. It, like, federal law supersedes even a state constitution. And I don't think people understand that. I think people think that Dobbs somehow was like, actually, all the states get to decide what they want forever. It's set in stone. No, it does not undo the supremacy clause of the U.S. Constitution. Oh, the children have been left behind.
I know we're trying to, like, explain so much of this as we should and analyze it and, you know, sit with it. But also, can I just offer that people are also racist and sexist.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the hurt. That's the first hurdle.
I know, but Julissa, people don't want to be told that they're racist and sexist. Well, they might vote even harder against women's bodily autonomy next time. They might hit the vote button harder.
When I saw that Florida decision, I am from a blue dot in a red state, and everyone I know travels to Florida. That is the south of France for them, you know? Like, they are going to Disney World. They are going to Disney World. And I see pregnant friends go to Disney World to take their other children constantly. And I think everybody needs to be aware that when you are traveling to these states that have these bans and you are a married mother that has children going to Disney World, they will let you die. So you are not safe if you are coming from a place where abortion, if you are in that state and you are pregnant and you need life-saving medical care, you are probably not going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Or you'll be stuck in a hospital there for months and your children won't have like a mother like with them for months. Even if you don't die, which is the worst case scenario, which is entirely a possibility. Sorry, we keep threatening to go to a break and then not.
That is not the happiest place on earth.
No.
Come to Disneyland.
Disney World, you know, if Mickey started performing abortions, I think that would
be. She might need to. You know Daisy's ready to go.
Daisy
is rolling up those duck sleeves.
All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, are we going to unfriend the Trump supporters that we know, if we know any? Stick around to find out. Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast that has no qualms telling you to stop fucking Republican men. If you're doing it, first of all, why? Second of all, stop. It's time. Like, it's been time. It's definitely time now. Okay, I'm still here with our panel. I want to talk about a debate that has been batting around our algorithms. It was summed up well by a listener email we received. I'm going to read it. My best friend and I never talk about politics. I knew we had different views, so I sometimes censor myself around her, but I never thought she was a full-on Trump supporter. It wasn't until I saw her social media posts on Tuesday that everything clicked into place, and I realized she quietly supported him all along. Am I an asshole for letting my relationship with my best friend just die? Outside of politics, she's been there for me in a huge way. Should we have a conversation about this? And if we do, what's the point? Help, please. So panel, tough question. Alyssa, you want to kick us off? What do you think? Do we unfriend Trump supporters that we know?
Well, first, the fact the friend posted about it, that's hard. That means you're proud. Okay. And so that's one. Two, I think we need to initially lead with curiosity. Like, why did you vote for him? Like, what about it was appealing? Like, if someone, I mean, if your friend is like, I think it's hard to understand that she didn't know, like, that there were no warning signs that the friend, like, I feel like if your friend's a Trumper,
I think some, she know and didn't want to
there's some warning know. Signs.
Mm-hmm. Utah yeah. girls. Utah
I mean, girls I think you have to, I think the unfriending a bit depends on, like, a lot of factors. Like, the why is one. Like, if my friend was working at the ShopRite and was like, listen, okay, I've tried so hard. The Democrats told me, and again, this is low information voters. The Democrats told me everything's fine. I'm not fine. So I decided to give it a try for Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's different than your rich neighbor down the street who's like, oh my God, tariffs and taxes. Like, that's, or someone who's just like, I hate people of color. Like, I think that there are different reasons. And I think that if this person, like she says in this, that this person's been, has played a big role in her life, I think it's worth trying to understand why they voted for them and then decide whether you unfriend them. That mm-hmm. would be my opinion, I think.
All right, Alyssa, yeah. Counterpoint. Fuck them. Fuck them. The counterpoint is fuck
them. That's
em.
Fine.
My stance is you and I are living in completely different, like, parts of the country. So mm-hmm. Alyssa's, like, the practical way for her to move through the world safely is, like, she's got neighbors who are MAGA people. Like, you just, she lives in a small town, community, whatever. I have the luxury of living in a place where I don't really have to deal with or be around Trump supporters. And so anybody that is, like, tangentially a Trump supporter in my life that I have picked up on that, you're out. Fuck you. I don't have any more time for you.
See, I feel more that way about my people in New York City.
Yeah, I don't have any time for you. I don't have any energy for you. I don't have any sympathy for you. I am saving my energy and my sympathy for my family, my friends, for the people I know. I'll stand up for people that I know will stand up for me. And I know that that's very uncharitable, but I feel like Democrats have been feminized in this way where we are expected to just be tolerant and forgive over and over again and give to GoFundMes of people who didn't get vaccinated for COVID because they bought into Trump's lies and then they had to get two lung transplants. And now they have a GoFundMe and they kept crying to me for charity. No, I'm done. I'm done. Julissa, that's my take. Go on.
Two things. James Baldwin quote, right? We can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist. Mm-hmm. That to me is like a compass, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're my friend and you voted for Trump, then you're not really my friend because, you know, he's talking about mass deportations and like, yeah, I'm a citizen now. But by the way, they also say they're going to turbocharge the denaturalization task force. So like, who knows, you know, maybe I won't be a citizen anymore. I don't know, you know? And so that's number one. Like, if it's someone, and you know, I have family members who supported Trump, and I am like, you're still my family member, but, like, I am not going to be in close contact with you because, like, every time we talk about this, we end up in a big fight, you know? And at the same time, you know, when I think about like Latino voters, that's a big, huge chunk of people to just toss to the side and say, I'm not going to care about you. You're stupid. You're, you know, how could you possibly vote against your own interest? Like all the things that I have actually said in the past, you know, because I also think it's hard when someone, you know, I don't think any of us here are like, I mean, I don't know, right? But I assume none of us here are like living paycheck to paycheck. Like I assume none of us here are struggling to pay our rent or worried that, you know, our landlord is kicking us out and nothing around us we can afford. And so we might have to be living in an RV or live in our car. But those are real concerns of people, mm-hmm. right? And however wrong it is, Donald Trump has sent them a message that when I'm in office, your life is going to be better. Mm-hmm. You're no longer going to have to worry about those things, which is totally incorrect.
But
because no matter who's
the
president.
The faults of what has happened to you are like, he's saying that the reasons that it's happening to them is like racist. And people are like, yes, yes, that's it. It's immigrants. It's brown.
Which is like, that is like the, you know, one of the oldest playbooks in the messages in the playbook, right? Like blame the immigrants. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's not my fault. You don't have a job. Like, I'm sorry. It's just not, you know, like actually look at the corporations, look at profits, look at, you know, all these things. So I think we have to continue to like invest again, like invest in those communities, figure out what the right message is that's going to resonate with them. And so in some ways, I have an easier time being like the community, people I don't know, let me like talk to you. But if you're my friend and like we're close, like, I'm sorry, we don't share the same values. I don't want to be your friend.
Right, right.
I'm surprised because I'm like, oh, I did this in 2016. You know, like I got them out then and now. But so they're gone. And all there were definitely people posting on my algorithm that was like, we can disagree and still be. And then I would go and unfriend them and they had already unfriended me. And so that was great to be like, oh, okay. The do as I say, not as I do crowd is really having a great time right now. There was someone in my life in 2016, very, very close to me. Did not vote for Donald Trump. Did not vote for Hillary Clinton. Voted third party.
Jill Stein?
No, voted for who they would call Gary Anderson. And I said, you mean Gary Johnson? Gary Anderson was the Tennessee Titans place kicker.
Maybe he voted for Gary Anderson. Maybe
you know what?
Right in.
And Aaron, you are so right to know that it was a man. And so I knew that this man was gettable. And I think you got to look at the people that you are and you go, can you be bullied to my side? And I bullied this man. I bullied him and bullied him. I would drink wine and I would scream at him and I would bring up everything in my life. And I had other people standing right alongside bullying me. And this man is the most progressive man I know now living in a red state.
Congrats.
We were able to get him. But there are other people that I looked at and I said, there's no fucking way I'm getting you. Goodbye forever. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you think you can bring them over, bring them over. If they're a lost cause, goodbye. You do not get to look at my fun hair, my cute outfits, and eat my good food.
That's right.
Wow, Megan, you straight up radicalized that dude. That was
and he is a rich, white, older man. And you know what he says now? Obamacare didn't go far enough. Yes, wow. I got him.
Right. He's right.
Exactly. He just repeats talking points. And sometimes I'll hear him say something and I go, is that what you meant? And he's like, I never should have said that. Like, you know, like he lives in fear of the women around him.
Good.
And that is, and if you see that there's a man like that, a woman like that, that you think you can bring him.
Okay.
Yeah. Megan, it sounds like you need to write a book about how to do this.
How to bully Republicans into agreeing with you. Or how to
Well, they got to have a good heart. They got to have a good heart. Yeah. And you know when people have a good heart and you know when people do not.
Yeah. Aaron, how about you? Like, how are you handling, do you know Trump voters? Like, how are you dealing with them when you encounter them?
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, let me just say, Aaron, your comments. I was like, are we talking about Trump supporters or Knicks fans? Like, you were really going in on those in New York. No, I mean, I think, look, and this, no, I do not have Trump supporters in my life that I know of. But also, I think especially to white folks who may be listening to this, because we know white people are overwhelmingly the people that have put Donald Trump back into office. White people are the ones who have had some very fraught Thanksgivings over the past decade. Mm. White people are the ones that are unfriending and blocking people in their lives. To Julissa's point, we are the trusted messengers for people in our networks, our families, our friends. People may see me on MSNBC and be like, screw her. She doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. Right. But somebody in your life who may listen to, who may still be open to listening to you because you are somebody that they feel like actually cares about them, is not intentionally lying to them. Right. Like, this is a person, to Megan's point, that still may be gettable. We cannot give up on our friends, our family. I think there was too much of that, frankly. After 2016, there were too many people that just said, fuck my aunt, my brother, my uncle, you know, and I get it. Like, if the vote for Donald Trump was just a symptom of larger issues, like, oh, by the way, this I'm realizing this person actually is misogynist. I'm realizing this person actually is homophobic. Right. I'm realizing this person actually is a racist. I'm realizing that this person, wait a minute, you were at the insurrection? Bye. Right? Didn't see that coming. Right, but here you are posting from the embassy suites in D.C. So now you got to go. I get that. But also, to Jaleesa's point, for people who are thinking about the me and not the we, helping them to understand, yes, it's one person, one vote, but the votes that we cast affect all of us. Mm-hmm. I think there are more Americans that, you know, when we talk about loving democracy, this is, I mean, we are still at the end of the day an American family. And I think, you know, regardless of the outcome of the election, there are so many people who are ready to come back together and figure out a way forward together as a country. And so to the extent that there are people in our lives that want to do that work with us in good faith, and understanding, like, I think that is still a I'm going to say that is still a worthwhile endeavor.
Mm-hmm. That's, I think you're being a lot more graceful and classy than I am. and I fully admit that I am, like, operating purely out of id right now and, like, frustration. And I think, just to Jaleesa's point, there's a difference between me wanting the best for people in the country, just, like, as a concept, and me wanting to spend my personal energy on somebody who I'm just like, you, but you don't see, you know, like my
totally get that. And so, like, okay, so if I think that because our politics has been so divisive for so long, like, we are not thinking about people on the other side of our politics as still being members of the American family, right? Mm-hmm. You get pissed at your sibling all the time. So do I. Mm-hmm. Sibling pisses me off. Don't want to talk to sibling. Maybe you ain't talking to sibling for weeks or months, right? But, like, eventually you figure out how to move forward with your sister a lot of times, with your brother a lot of times. Yeah. Like, you figure that out, right? Because you do still have something connecting you to that person. Like, there is something there.
Right.
And to try to get to that, because at the end of the day, we do still care about our sisters and brothers. Like, they still are that, even though they may not be making the choices that we would make. They may not be making choices that are in the interest of a freer and fairer and more equal society.
Mm-hmm. But are we getting to a we need to talk about Kevin kind of situation? Like, is our sibling just going to, like, light us on fire when we're in our bed? Like, is the ideology of Trumpism so dangerous that there is no coexisting with being tolerant of it? And Alyssa, I know that that's, like, a loaded question, but I wonder what your thoughts are. Like, how do we be tolerant of an ideology that aims to make a big portions of us extinct, to kick people out of the country by the millions, to erase the identities of trans people? Like, how do we do that?
I appreciate that I am getting all the defensive Karen questions. and hope the listeners show me some grace. Couple things. One, I think, and Caroline will appreciate this, my friend Gina heard something on Real Housewives when they were talking about Trump that said, I don't hate you, but I see you. Right? Mm-hmm. And I think I do not think that, so for example, also to clarify, since I let off here, I do not have close friends that I rely on who voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. When I am thinking about Trump voters, I am thinking about the people who I see at the Agway and the people I see at the ShopRite and people who I interact with, but who are not in my, I don't want people to think I'm accepting of racists in my inner circle.
Oh, I don't think anybody reasonable would.
Can confirm.
I felt, yeah. I did feel a need to clarify.
Okay.
And I don't think it is, it in dealing with people, I don't think that we have to accept any ideology. Right. You know, I don't think at all. I don't think that is remotely part of it. I don't think that the wanting to reach out to or not excommunicate certain people is me saying, I get you. That's not it. If I want to learn a little bit about somebody and why they voted for him, if it is because of hateful ideology, that is a hard line. That is an absolute mm-hmm. no. That mm-hmm. is, you are voting for the absolute darkest part of humanity. But in a world where the economy was the number one thing that people voted on, I am also not, as a person who doesn't worry about paying her rent, going to tell someone they were wrong that the last 4 years they have suffered, and they are, for all intents and purposes, Kamala Harris was part of the administration. And mm-hmm. if they're like, you know what? I just got to try something different. And I thought there was an interesting thing. I'm sure you guys all saw it. But AOC mm-hmm. went to her Instagram and asked voters, because in her district, there was a pretty interesting delta, like of people, like people who voted for her and Trump. And she mm-hmm. asked them why. And she didn't do it in a condescending way. She was like genuinely curious. And look, some of the responses were mutes, but others were like, I feel like you care about me, and I felt like he cared about me, and that's just as, that's fundamentally. Mm. And maybe those aren't, you know, high information voters, but I think at a certain point we have to realize that not a lot of people have all the time on earth to be high information mm-hmm. voters, and that there is something to be learned from the fact that she was even thoughtful and generous enough to ask the question and want to know the answers. And yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then and voters are not always interested in information, right? Mm-hmm. It is about how they feel and what they're experiencing and how that's going to translate. Also, I just want to point out that the Real Housewives may have a lot to teach us about yes. coexisting under yeah. one roof. I just want to name that. That feels very important for us as we try to figure out the way forward. If they can do it, you know, that does give me hope for democracy.
Megan, you looked like you had something to add on the Real Housewives.
Well, I always do. I also think there's this idea that we all need to do something. If you don't have the energy mm-hmm. to do yeah. that, you totally. Don't need to do it. I have never been accused of having grace or patience ever in my life. My mother, who is a nurse, who lives in a red state, who puts her money where her mouth is, I know she's going to have the energy to do this because it's a means of survival for her because she has to. And what is going to work for my sweet Peggy Gailey is absolutely not going to work for her bitch daughter.
I was just thinking, like, you know, I think part of it, all of this is like, there was also like this perfect storm. And I know, like, you know, I don't want to like point fingers and be like, you know, their fault, this person's fault. But like the truth of it is, and I hope, and I'm more saying this because I hope that we learn something from this for the next time, which is like, you know, we also didn't have a primary. We all, like, people are all, were also, you know, the sort of the what's happening in Gaza was still, it was a factor. So like, I feel like, I almost feel like Kamala never had a real chance mm-hmm. because, you know, just she had 3 months. Mm-hmm. Right. So I just hope that we learn for the next time to have a real primary this time, not where we had like a coronation. I'm talking about 2016. Mm-hmm. That we actually listen to the voters and like let us decide who should be that candidate. Like, really, you mm-hmm. know, because maybe we will have a better chance next time. So, you know, to be honest, like, I keep going back and forth in my own mind. Like, the other day I texted a friend, you know I'll come around to this, but right now I feel like fuck Latinos for Trump, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like that today, mm-hmm. but maybe tomorrow I will again. Mm-hmm. And so to Megan's point, I think we had to take a deep breath and sort of really sit with this because it's been a week, right? And I feel like something as monumental as Trump, like, as I'm saying it out loud right now, I'm like, it does not fit in my head mm-hmm. how in the world he is back in the White House. Like, thank God I got to take my daughter to the White House, you know, like in September, because we're definitely not stepping foot in that White House for the next 4 years. So we just have to take a little bit of time to process. And like mm-hmm. I said, I'm so grateful that we have this space to kind of help us process some of that. And Erin, I am so impressed in the way in which you can have like such a serious face, but actually be like cracking a joke. I'm like, that is incredible. Yes, thank you for that. So yeah, that's all I got to say.
Erin, I want to close with you on before we take another quick break. Something that I've been,
okay, in 5 minutes.
I've been ruminating about the media's role in this again, because I feel like maybe we messed up again. And I wonder what your thoughts are on the media's role in getting Trump reelected. If the media, if you think as a person who is like in it, do you think the media is to blame and made mistakes again this time?
Well, I mean, look, I think that it would be journalistic malpractice for us to not be introspective as well in this moment, right? I mean, especially as we're covering, you know, what the Democratic Party or Kamala Harris could have done better, or what Donald Trump did in the Republicans did right. Like, also, as a profession, we must also ask ourselves, what was our role in this, to the extent that people are still reading newspapers and, you know, all the rest of it, right? Watching cable news, getting their information from journalism sources. So one thing I would say, you know, the narratives around voters of color and what they were going to do, the focus on that to the exclusion of what are white voters, particularly white women, going to do? Like, that was not, I did not see a whole lot of reporters going to the winery or wherever white women are hanging out and kicking it. Whatever the white woman equivalent is of the barber shop or the diner, right? Whatever it is. They did not go there and ask them about their votes. And I, again, largest voting bloc in the country. Why are we not asking white women what they are planning to do? By the end, it was, well, you know, white women, your vote, your choice, your secret, you know, secret ballot, whatever. No, but like we somehow needed to know how everybody else was going.
They needed one country club in McLean, Virginia. They would have had all the data they needed.
There you go. Right. So like, I feel like that was and continues to be a missed opportunity. I think that. Yeah, I mean, like, the whole reason that you know, we're asking about what black men were going to do or what Latino men were going to do, you know, was because those people were expected to mitigate the votes of white people who were definitely voting for Donald Trump. But there was no need for no real exploration for why they were voting the way that they were voting. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I think the only other thing I would say on that. You know, we went into this year at the 19th saying abortion was on the ballot. And I think that for women of color, voters of color, it absolutely was. But as we saw at the top of the ticket, it was not for white voters. And I think hearing from voters when they said again and again and again and again that the economy was their top issue. And I'm not saying abortion is not also an economic issue, because it absolutely is.
Yep.
But they... For them to keep saying the economy is the thing that I care about, and yes, there are no—I don't believe there's any such thing as a single issue voter, but that was—but your top issue is likely your most motivating issue, and that—but that was not always the narrative that we saw that we went into this election thinking, especially because you did have abortion. Manifesting so, like, that issue manifesting so strongly in both of these candidates. One candidate who literally ushers in the fall of Roe, and the other candidate who is the, you know, champion of reproductive rights in this country. Mm-hmm. But what about but those candidates were not, the voters and their concerns were the issue. That was the deciding factor.
All right. Well, you know, I guess everybody renew your passports, get certified copies
legal documents.
Of your legal documents.
Vaccinations.
And, yes, vaccinations, 100%. We're going to take a quick break while you do that, and then we'll be back with more hysteria. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who are, you know, not into 4B, but 4B curious at this point. 4B curious. Google it, folks, if you don't know what it is. We'll probably do a whole other show on it because it's super interesting and maybe of interest to some of our listeners. Okay, before we get to Sandy Petty, a few announcements for the class. Now that the race is over, let's take a look back at the polls. On this week's new episode of Polar Coaster, Dan reflects on what they got right, where they fell short, and what we still don't know.
Then Hysteria producer Caroline Reston joins to tackle listeners' burning questions. To catch this exclusive subscriber series, sign up at crooked.com/friends.
And over on Crooked's legal podcast, Strict Scrutiny, hosts and constitutional law professors Leah, Kate, and Melissa are breaking down what last week's election means for the future of the Supreme and state courts.
Oi.
Yeah. That's, boy. That's something that could be tackled in hour-long chunks weekly. No.
I mean, I love this show because it helps us make sense of how the legal system works without needing a law degree. It's smart, funny, and focuses on how the issues we all care about could be impacted by the courts in 2025 without feeling like homework.
And honestly, getting a law degree sounds like a big pain in the ass. Like, think of the Vivek Ramaswamis that you'd have to, like, sit next to in class.
Nope. I actually, Erin, that is where I have to draw the circle of my mental health. I cannot think about that. Subscribe to Strict Scrutiny wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.
All right. Here we are. Time for Sandy Petty. Got the whole super panel here. I'm so glad to have all of you ladies today. This was felt cathartic for all of us to kind of talk about this.
Cheaper than my therapist.
I mean, honestly, in this economy, who can, I mean, okay, we're going to do Sandy Quarter / I Feel Petty. And I know that, like, we talked about this last week, that we're going to try to do a compartmentalization station style Sandy Petty and establish islands of peace in our lives during a time of chaos and refuse to allow the chaos and fear of the administration infringe on that piece, and I still firmly believe in that, but I am getting a lot of real petty happiness from the fact that Nick Fuentes was doxxed.
That's so good.
It is. I don't think doxxing is good.
No.
Exception that proves the rule. Nick Fuentes is a little boy who started the unfortunate trend, your body, my choice, after the election happened. And, his hairline is on a downward spiral toward his eyebrows, and his house address got posted online, and then somebody showed up to his house and knocked on his door. He assaulted the person, and I think now he's in trouble, and then his mom's house got doxxed, and honestly...
As my friend Didi would say, that seems like a personal problem.
Yeah, could not have happened to a perfect guy. He gives me the vibe of, like, I'd never, like, seen him beside his face, and I'd done my best to not really, like, look at his face, but he's such a tiny little guy.
Aren't they always, though?
They always are.
He's just
are.
A tiny little guy. He just kind of has the vibes of, like, the guy who got his own room at the frat house, you know? Because he's, like, in the frat because— Do you know who his father is? But everybody is, like, very uncomfortable with him. And when people's sisters come to visit, they're like, stay away from Nick. Like, and he's the bad guy at the bad frat. Yeah, that's what reminded me of him. I hope that, you know, he may have a position in the Trump administration as the Secretary of Small Dick Energy. But for now, you know, happy for him. Happy for him. I love that for him. Okay. Now I'm done being, like, a petty cunt for this week. Julissa, Sanity Corner or I Feel Petty?
I Feel Petty. But before, because I kept trying to figure out how to work this in, and I couldn't find the right time. So I just want to say Mexico elected its first woman president this year. So, you know, just throwing it out there.
That wall's going to have to keep us in.
Exactly. Now you, something else came up in my head, but I will refrain. I feel petty about husbands who did not fill up the gas tank.
Oh, shots fired!
Wait a minute.
Real life situation. It's like you see it. If I have to go to the gas station, I have, you know, our daughter in the car seat who, like, already wants to get home. So stopping to get gas is, like, it's a task with a toddler in the car seat. And so, you know, I don't always have time to stop by the gas station. And when you have somewhere to go, which is not a lot, but when you have somewhere to go and, you know, you're getting in the car and the husband says, hey, you might want to stop and get gas. Mm. And I'm like, I gave myself enough time to get there. I did not give myself enough time to stop by the gas station. And I thought I could make it. There were 14 miles of gas and there were 13 miles of travel time.
Wow.
And as I kept going and going and going, you know,
that's
stuck in traffic.
Close to the
sun. Yeah. And then at some point it was 2 miles gas, 2.3 miles to my destination. And that's when I decided I had to go get gas. And so, you know, husbands, if you, you know, just partners, it's like if there's two people who drive in the car, I feel like when there's a quarter tank left, that's at the point it should be refilled.
Ooh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, quarter tank.
That is.
Like when the little flashing light, when the little flashing, it's too late. Mm-hmm. You've messed up. You should have already filled up the gas tank.
I feel like husbands, especially right now, if you have a wife or female partner who supported Kamala Harris, it is a very bad time for her. It's hard.
It's fresh.
Specifically hard, and it's fresh. You got to start noticing things.
Fill up the gas tank.
Look around. Like sometimes, I mean, look, I love my husband. He's great. He is better than 99% of men. That's why I married him. But we have had this conversation where he's like, can you just tell me what needs to be done around the house? And I'm like, item one is look around the house and notice what needs to be done. And item number two is do it. And I feel like filling the gas tank is like a cousin of issue.
To be fair, I mostly drive this car, but like he drives it on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like you should notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Got to.
Fill up the gas tank.
All right. Yes. That's a fair. I feel petty. Aaron, all right. You're up.
Now, see, Julissa, you could have been in the Sani category if the gas tank was full.
100%. I could have been praising the husband. Yes.
All right. Well, I will say, okay, I actually have both of these covered. My Sani corner. I am leaning heavily into my emotional support football games, okay? College football, NFL,
yes.
I'm all about it. This is my favorite time of year. And I am now free. I'm unburdened by the political ads that have been running nonstop during football games. I can watch football in peace. It's lovely. Like this first Sunday after the election, I was like, yes. I needed to just be able to watch, because again, the disassociation was real after covering this election for the better part of a year and a half. So there's that. My petty, the other election that I care about, very consequential for millions of Americans. If Beyonce does not win fucking Grammy of the Year, I will lose it. That will be a bridge too far for me. If she does not win... Like I don't even know what this country is about.
Where are you moving to if Beyonce doesn't win?
I need to start looking into citizenship elsewhere, because this is not the America where Beyonce continues to be denied. It's not an America that I want to be in.
Well, there are some countries in Spain, Costa Rica, I've heard. There are some countries that where it's easier to repatriate as an American underneath a non-Beyonce regime, for sure.
Yeah. I believe I can claim refugee status as a Beyonce supporter.
I mean, you can move to Sweden, Norway, wherever you want, honestly, if you got that. Alyssa, what's your Sani petty this week?
You guys, I'm petty, and it's super petty and dumb, but... in the last 6 months, I have had to be on so many different kinds of new medication, and I'm trying to see what works and I'm trying to see what doesn't. But the thing I cannot do is have too much caffeine. Mm-hmm. And so I'm down to one cup of coffee.
Oh, God.
I drink the cayenne cleanse drinks to like give me a pep in my step. But guys, because of fucking climate change. The allergies in New York are so bad. My sinuses are in so much pain, but I can't take all that medicine during the day because it will make me hot. My heart will jump out of my chest.
Oh, no.
But why can I not buy the nighttime shit separately? Why? In order to get my hands on nighttime allergy, sinus, and pressure medicine, do I have to buy the daytime? I am up to my knees in daytime medicine I will never use. But last night, I was scrounging like a junkie in the back of my drawer. I'm like, there must be one more nighttime in here. And I just simply do not understand. Maybe one of our listeners will be able to explain it. Why must I buy a combo pack? I can get just daytime, or I can get a combo pack, but I can't just get nighttime, and all of it is kept behind the counter. So none of it makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm suffering.
You need some Lucy's, number one, some Lucy nighttimes. But also, I mean, there could be a listener right now that needs those daytime packets. So if that is you,
I will
contact Alyssa.
Send us an email. I will put them. They're all sealed up.
Not good to go. Not to be dealers on here, but I mean, but I have, there's a marketplace.
I have so much. I have so much. I actually DM'd our community fridge to see if I could put them in there, and they were like, absolutely not, you maniac. And I was like, I asked.
We are living in an era when we are going to have to lean on each other and look to each other mm-hmm. for community. And so, yes, Erin, I agree with you that I think we need to start offing our extra OTC meds. Mm-hmm.
If you need it,
to each other,
and
sure.
if you've got a lead on fluoride too,
yeah,
I may need it.
Anyone got a cure for brain worms? Anyone got a cure for brain worms?
It's ivermectin. Get it at Tractor Farm Supply.
Oh, my God. That's true. Wow. Coming around full circle. All right. Megan, Sanity okay. Corner, I Feel Petty.
Thank you. You said that I should go last because I usually yell, and I am honored. Okay. So, Erin, I'm so excited to hear that you are also a sporty girl. I'm going to lay out a situation for you that has been plaguing me to the point that I have intertwined it with the election. So, the Indianapolis Colts, who I am the biggest fan of, benched their starting quarterback, Anthony Richardson, 22-year-old black man, who was trying his best. He needed reps. He needed to improve. And the reason he was benched was because there were calls from white supremacists. That is what I believe. Pat McAfee's were loud. All of the really white Colts fans were like, we want him benched. So then they started a 39-year-old white man named Joe Flacco, who is not at fault, but who played terribly, threw a pick six on the first play of the game last year. That's the worst thing you can do. A pick six means you throw an interception and the other team runs it back for a touchdown. Worst thing you can do. On the way here, I get news from multiple texts coming in that Joe Flacco has been benched and Anthony Richardson is going to start again. This is a victory for black men. This is a victory for me. This is a loss for racists, and I feel as though I have willed this to happen, and the intensity to which I needed it to happen shocked even me. And then I will also recommend, while we're in the sports place, Caroline is reading too, Maya Moore's autobiography that she wrote with her now husband, Jonathan Irons, who was falsely imprisoned and sentenced to 55 years. If you need something that will make you go, wow, I could be doing a lot worse, it will do that. And it will also show you a cause that does need attention now and forever, no matter who is president, which is criminal justice reform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, good. You were yelling about something good at the end.
I actually have a sports book.
Yeah.
Can I recommend a sports book? I don't know if you've read it, Megan. Locker Room Talk.
No, I haven't read it.
Oh, it's about Melissa Ludke. She was the first woman sports reporter trying, and it's about her struggle to get inside. You know what? I'm going to send you a copy.
I would love it because
I'm going to send you a copy.
I have been in those.
It's full of every like sports name from that time. It's really good.
I've seen some wild stuff in my life. I have interviewed men who were fully dressed from the waist up, fully naked from the waist down.
That's called Donald Ducking.
Yes. And I have.
Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. I have interviewed a lot of Winnie the Poohs in my day.
There are so many Disney characters who just straight up don't wear pants.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And you know what? Ducks are one of the few birds that do have penises. Most birds don't.
Wow.
Ducks do.
See?
Good fact. Good fact.
Ending this on a high note.
I want to actually ask our listeners, because I know that you will have the answer, because you guys always do, before we go. I am, like, obsessed with embroidery now. It's, like, the only thing that's keeping me from doom scrolling while I'm, like, watching television that I don't need to be looking at constantly, which is, like, most television now. I feel like most television is made to kind of half pay attention to. Not Slow Horses. Slow Horses is very good. Anyway.
Or The Diplomat.
Or The Diplomat. Yeah. 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 So I, you know, I've been trying to, like, a lot of embroidery patterns are only available as PDFs, and I want, like, a cutter. Like, I want, like, a printer, a way to print onto the fabric, but I don't know what brand to get. So if any of our listeners are big crafters, tell me, which one do I get? I cry cut, but people have told me it's bad. I have a friend that's like a weaver who was like, I just draw the pattern. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. So yeah, I want a recommendation. Is anyone else looking for recommendations for anything?
Martha Sports Stewart book? Is about to text you, Aaron.
Oh.
She's just going to text you.
I would, you know what, it would almost make up for the Trump victory if Martha Stewart personally texted me.
Hey, heard you were looking for this.
I would be like, oh my God, I can die happy. All right, this was a really great show, and I'm so grateful for all of you for being here. Megan, Julissa, Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. I want to, like, reassemble this exact panel.
100%. Yes.
Let's, like, move in together. Is that too soon? Too much? Let's all
move in
together.
Let's get a compound.
I'll buy my caftans as we speak. Let's
amazing.
See you on the lanai.
Alyssa, thank you, as always, for being my ride or die this week and every week. And listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. There will be more hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolade, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.